Hello and welcome to this episode of the Scotland's Future Series podcast from the University of St Andrews. I'm Mike Gettenby, the University's Deputy Legal Officer. In a recent episode, I was joined by two guests to discuss the not proven verdict in light of the Scottish Government's Victims, Witnesses and Justice Reform Scotland Bill. Whilst the bill contains a number of proposed changes to the criminal justice system in Scotland, the most controversial of these are provisions to run rape trials before a judge without a jury. The backlash to the proposal in the legal community has been substantial. A significant number of local bar associations have voted against the proposals, and lawyers across the country have said that they will not take part in the planned pilot. Whilst there is extensive coverage of the debate of the pilot both on social and mainstream media, I thought it would be useful to explore some of the issues around juries from a cultural and historic perspective. I am therefore very pleased to say that I've been joined by Professor John Hudson and Dr. Vicky Meandazi from the University. John is the Bishop Wardlaw Professor of Legal History, and Vicky is a Knight Fellow in the Legal and Constitutional Research Unit at the University of St Andrews Institute of Legal and Constitutional Research. Thank you very much for joining me. John, I thought it'd be useful to start with a bit about the cultural and history relevance of juries, something which has been a key part of the legal framework and criminal justice system in Scotland and other systems for centuries.
Okay, the decision-making processes going back to the Middle Ages in courts very much was communal or collective. So judgments in an early medieval court was made by the people who made up the court, in the same way that in the past universities were run by the collectivity in Scotland of a senate and a court. So courts, in the legal sense, made judgments. Now, in difficult cases, difficult criminal cases in the early Middle Ages, cases would be decided by trial by ordeal, either carrying a piece of hot iron for 3 paces, having your hand bound up and it being checked 3 days later, whether your hand was infected or clean, if infected, guilty, if clean, innocent, or by trial by cold water, thrown into water. If you sink, you're innocent, you've been received by the blessed element. If you float, you're guilty. Now, in 1215, the church forbid priests to participate in these ordeals. And there is panic across Europe as to what you do in criminal cases. In England and some other places, for example, Denmark, fairly rapidly they decide they're going to use juries to decide criminal cases. Elsewhere, they develop a different system known to us now as the inquisitorial system, which is judge-led rather than involving juries. At the same time, civil cases, land cases, increasingly are being decided by what are in effect juries. Groups of 12 neighbours who report on the truth of, they speak the truth, which is what verdict means, about the particular issue. And these two elements are central to criminal and civil law, both in England and from there in Scotland during the Middle Ages and up to the present day, though to a decreasing extent.
Thank you very much. One thing I think it's also worth touching on in this debate is Scottish legal system is an unusual one. One of the very few mixed legal systems, elements from the civil law and elements from the common law traditions. Yeah. And what that means for criminal trials in particular in Scotland, John?
Yeah. The criminal trial jury probably spreads from England to Scotland in the Middle Ages. And this is part of the combination of the Scottish legal system. During the 12th, 13th, 14th century, you probably get a spread of many elements of English common law to Scotland. From the 15th, 16th century, you get increasing influence from the civil law system. That is the law based on the law of the church, canon law, and on Roman law. And the two of these sit together in varying combinations according to area of law. And in criminal law, it is the common law tradition that is dominant. Though the juries in Scotland are slightly different from juries in England. You mentioned in the introduction the not proven verdict, which is something that develops in the early modern period and is now likely to be abolished. The other key differences are 15 people in a Scottish jury, 12 people in most English juries, and worldwide 12 tends to be the most common number. And the other is decision on simple majority. So in a Scottish jury, if you get an 8-7 vote, or, for example, an 8-6 vote if someone doesn't vote or if someone has had to leave, you only need 8 people to convict, even, for example, in a murder case. So that balance of decision-making is weighted in some ways, possibly, towards finding people guilty within the Scottish system.
Thank you. And I think what you touched on there in terms of the development of the system is a key point when we're considering new rules being brought in to change the system. How does that work with the customs practices that have developed over centuries? For example, that point about having 8 people to convict is often, the argument is it's balanced out by the need for corroboration in Scots law that there isn't in other legal systems.
The development is very interesting because I said that the criminal trial jury starts in 13th century.
Yeah.
At that stage, juries were what are called self-informing. They were meant to find out the facts of the case. The very reverse of what is the case now, where if, as in my case, you've been on jury service, you are banned from finding out anything else about the case. So this the jury has continuity, but it also has very, very marked changes as well.
Thank you. Vicky, you've practiced law in Kenya.
Yes.
A common law system that doesn't have juries.
It doesn't have juries.
How does it work there for a non-jury system in a common law system?
Yes, so Kenya, as you said, is a common law system. So it means that accused persons are innocent until proven guilty. And it's unique because as much as we don't have juries, the process still is predominantly about fairness and impartiality to both parties. And so you find that particularly in criminal cases, they are usually heard by magistrates. Okay. Or if there are serious cases of murder or treason, they're usually heard by a judge in the High Court. And in these cases, they're quite unique because the process that usually occurs is that they go through, first of all, an establishment of whether there's a prima facie case, that is a case after being presented by the prosecution, whether that case is enough to convict. Or, for instance, if it's not enough, then it goes to a no case to answer verdict. So first of all, it's about the prosecution proving their case. And after the prosecution presents their case, then the either party submits or makes arguments as to the weightiness of the evidence presented and the case argued. And then it's up to the judge or magistrate to decide, okay, in this case, I don't think the evidence is weighty enough, so there's no case to answer. At that point, the accused person is acquitted. But then if there is a case to answer or a prima facie case has been established, then the defense presents its case. But then if a case to answer is established, the judge or magistrate is not supposed to give any reasons so as not to prejudice the case. Yeah, so it's quite unique. And when we talk about the benefits of having single judge, single magistrates as compared to a jury, I could say that there are various reasons. Yep. First of all, judges and magistrates make decisions based on law and facts, and you'd find that juries mainly make decisions based on facts. Yep. And obviously, judges are magistrates, and magistrates are trained in law and also trained in the rules of evidence. Yes. So they know which evidence or which arguments to dismiss for being, for instance, unacceptable questioning or being inadmissible, and those to allow. And so that's different from a jury, because a jury would not, for instance, when we look at rape trials and issues such as demeanor of the victim coming in, or questions about who's a real victim, how are they dressing, basically what was their relationship, if they had a previous relation, sexual relation with the particular accused person, then it's adjudged as, or there's this misconception as, oh, maybe there was implied consent and so on. But in this case, because the judge or the magistrate knows the rules of evidence, this misconceptions don't most of the time end up being considered. And so you find that that is also an advantage. And also in Kenya, there are specialized, as much as there's civil and criminal cases, there are also specialized courts or court divisions. So you'd find that there is a division on environment and land court. There's a division on sexual offenses, on anti-corruption. And so judges and magistrates who are appointed to these divisions have expertise in those areas. Or if they are appointed and don't have particular expertise, they go through training in the Judiciary Yep. Institute or Judiciary Academy. They go through a particular training in those areas, and so they're more adept at analyzing the law and the facts in specialized cases, including rape cases or more complex cases. So that's more of an advantage in having single judge trial, single magistrate trial, and it doesn't compromise still on whether an accused person, or on like the presumption of innocence, which is still very much considered, and which is still plays a big role in single judge and single magistrate criminal cases.
Thank you very much. Sorry, George.
Can I add something about the prima facie
yes.
element, which in Britain, again, that would be a Crown Prosecution Service, yes. Procurator Fiscal decision. Of course, in America, it still is partly the business of a jury.
Yes.
Just as it was in England before, originally in England. And therefore, again, you have a major change in the way that juries are used, which again differs between systems. America, grand jury and trial jury. UK, trial yes. jury. Kenya, no jury.
And I think there's a couple of points to pull out from that. First of all, the bill that's just gone to the Scottish Parliament does contain provisions for specialist courts and specialist training for judges. And that reflects and mirrors back comments in the previous podcast where we had, where Miss M talked about the process of going through the criminal justice system in Scotland and how different that was to the civil system. That's the first thing. But it also shows that just because you have a common law system does not mean that there's automatically a benefit or even a right to have juries. John, one of the things that I think hasn't been touched on a lot in the debate is almost the erosion of jury trials yeah. in the last, well, I mean, in arguably in the last 1,000 years, but there is that erosion of jury trials for various reasons that aren't necessarily yeah. policy decisions like they are here.
Yeah. I mentioned at the start about how juries were very widely used in
yes.
civil cases, and that has basically just completely disappeared. Yeah. And it has very largely been done on grounds of efficiency in two senses. One is efficiency to speed yes. trials on. The other is legal efficiency on the grounds that maybe jurors cannot understand some of the complex issues. At the same time, there's been reduction in the number of criminal jury yes. trials as well, or the proportion of criminal jury trials, partly by reduction in the range of offences that are covered. For example, more things being treated as less serious than require jury trial. And again, this is largely done for reasons of administrative efficiency, cost and so on, not out of any form of legal debate.
Yes.
And that is why the current issue, which is being dealt with on a more philosophical level, is really interesting.
I think it really is interesting. And there is a line, if you have a system where you have some cases by jury, some by not jury, society drawing a line on which class of cases. One of the rationales for the move towards this pilot and potentially having judge-only trials for rape cases and other sexual offences cases potentially is the conviction rate, which, and again we touched on that on another podcast, is very low for rape cases and attempted rape cases compared to other crimes. My concern about that is it takes you to a point, are you changing what the initial presumption is?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long tradition in, certainly in the common law,
yes.
Of phrases such as it's better for one guilty person to go free than for 19 guilty people to go free than
yes.
for one innocent person to be convicted. Sometimes it's 100
yes.
Guilty people to go free and one innocent person to be convicted. And this goes back again to the Middle Ages. It goes back to the writings of someone called Sir John Fortescue, who is comparing the common and, in effect, the civil law systems. And he sees jury trial and the presumption of innocence
yes.
as big advantage of the common law system. Question now is it actually better for 19 guilty people to go free? Mm-hmm. And that is where the worry about conviction rates comes in.
Yes.
and worry about conviction rates and its relationship to the presumption of innocence. It's really quite awkward, because it's saying that if there's a 1% conviction rate, 99 people are guilty, people are going free, even though they haven't been proved to be guilty in a court.
Yes, and that is something that is echoed in a lot of debate that we're seeing at the minute. Vicky, one of the things you've touched on was biases. Mm-hmm. A lot of the current debate is following research that's happened around what they call rape myths, biases in juries. However, judges are human. Judges have biases, whether we like them or not, whether or not they're in specialist courts. I wonder if you could talk a wee bit around those biases, because I think it's important for us to acknowledge that, and I say this as a lawyer, judges are not superhuman. They are subject to the same biases, pressures, views that any other person could have.
Yes, so obviously, as much as judges are judges, they're also human beings. And so one of the issues that arise, particularly in common law jurisdictions where criminal cases are not heard by juries but single judges, is issues around bias. And one of the things, either actual bias, or if there, for instance, there's a presumption of bias based on, you'd find some of the rape cases where the accused person's counsel would argue that the magistrate or judge needs to be changed because of their demeanor, if they react very, very much, the reaction shows that they're very much towards the other side, then they would say that that is a cause either for the judge to recuse themselves or for there to be, it would be a cause or one of the grounds of appeal. And so you find that as much judges have, and magistrates have their own personal predilections. So they're supposed to make decisions based on the law and an analysis of the facts as well and evidence. But you find that there are so many principles that can be applied. For every argument, there is a defense. And so you find that even though they have the law, they also have to decide based on their analysis of the facts and the law, which then brings in some aspects of what they think. And so when we look at that fact, then we can't discount the fact that also this biases seep in and this misconceptions, for instance, about who's an ideal victim, then also affect judges and magistrates. So it's not just about jurors. But then the goodness is that in single trial, a single judge and single magistrate trials, there is a requirement for a reasoning. There has to be a judgment that is written and that it's supposed to be based on not just the facts and the evidence, but the law. So to a large extent, that limits the extent of the bias. And also, like, as I said, in such cases, either party can ask for the magistrate or the judge to recuse themselves if there are reasonable grounds to feel as if there are issues that would affect the justness or the impartiality in the case. And so I would say there's bias, but it's a bit mitigated by the fact that there has to be a written reason that is given at the end of the case.
I think that adds to one another the characteristics of jury trial, which is that the debates amongst jurors coming to their decision are not stated, and they're not allowed to be stated. It's very hard to tell how prejudices are coming into play and whether prejudices are coming into play, and there's no legal recourse against them because they're never stated. They're in a black box.
Absolutely. One of the most high-profile Scottish trials in living memory was the Lockerbie trial. And interestingly, it would normally, given the offences, it would have been in front of a jury. A deal was done to hold the trial in Holland, and it was three judges sitting. And what's interesting is not so much their decision, but then when it was appealed, and how the appeal judges then tiptoed around the issue of, we can look at this because it's a legal point, but we can't look at this because it's a factual point that a jury would have considered. But it was one of those rare cases where judges were actually giving reasons for their factual findings in a case
like that.
Yeah, and then also to add, in complex cases, for instance, in common law jurisdictions like Kenya, if it's really complex, then it requires a panel of judges to hear the case. Yeah. So actually, it's not just a single judge that is required to hear a case sometimes. And if it's more complicated, like in the case that you mentioned, then a panel of judges is a required way to go.
No, that's great. I wonder if there's a wider societal point in all of this, which is, we've talked about the erosion of the jury system. It has diminished. But we are still reserving the most serious crimes, the decision on them to be found by a jury, whether it's the, you know, formulation of a jury of your peers, but it's a jury. It's a society, representative society making a decision, not just professional judges, professional lawyers. I wonder how important that is in Scotland, or broadening it out to the rest of the UK, where that principle's been established.
I think the participatory element's really important. It must be one of the most direct places where a group of individuals, small group of individuals, directly participate in the workings of the state and of society. And having that participatory element, I think, is really important. And probably then does have some effect on keeping the processes of law preferably straight and preferably more simple, because it has to work in some way that a group of, from my experience of jury service, very committed people participate in. Whereas once you're away from that, law becomes even more detached from society.
And I think you can see that particularly in the American system and the grand jury. At the minute, there are various grand juries have been impaneled in respect of the previous president, but you can see how hard it is for people to attack grand juries because they are a selection of people from across society, therefore giving it a legitimacy that maybe if it was somebody, a political appointed judge or somebody who'd come up through the legal field was making the decisions. It does, I think, fundamentally change the way we view a decision.
I think that's right. There's this tension, isn't there, that the ideal of the jury is 12 typical people, preferably 12 people with typical views.
Yes.
And the difficulty we have here is views, conscious views may be overcomable.
Yes.
For example, by judges intervening within cases or judges giving directions. But the studies of jury practice suggest that it may even be that judges' directions against thinking in a certain way prompt those matters for discussion.
Yes.
It's a very, very difficult one to combat.
Yes. And then also, being an equality law expert and academic, there's always that aspect of the problem with public opinion.
Yes.
So juries, 12 or 15 people from the public, expressing sentiments, public opinion, that most of the time you'd find that there are various misconceptions in the public opinions. And so you'd find that it's quite disadvantageous, particularly for vulnerable and marginalized groups who are on the negative end of that public opinion. And so juries, as much as they could be method of public participation, they could also be disadvantageous, particularly to vulnerable and marginalized groups, and also to victims or accused persons, depending on what the type of case is.
Yeah. Thank you very much, both of you. Thank you very much for watching or for listening to this podcast. We hope you found it informative. The bill is passing through Scottish Parliament at the minute, and it will be interesting to see how both parliamentarians and the wider legal profession deal with it if the bill becomes law, with the provisions around this, the change to judge-only trials for certain offences, even if it's only on a pilot basis. Thank you.